Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Friday edition, Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, live from the Titans locker room store here at Nissan Stadium. Titans set to host the New York Jets Sunday kickoff 3:05 right here behind us. Be an interesting day to see what the crowd looks like considering Monday night's performance. Paul Kuharski is with me. I'm Jason Martin, Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow in Cookeville. They are calling state championship games all weekend, so appreciate the opportunity to fill in. David Reed, chairman of the board, behind the glass, spinning the dials radio style for us. We bring in an old friend of mine, a current friend of the Midday 180, the one and only Clay Travis. Clay, how are you?
Doing well, guys. I'm on the road down to Atlanta for Georgia-Bama, so if I have a little bit of scattershot reception, apologies, but I'm headed down for what I think is going to be a pretty good game tomorrow.
No private jet available this week?
You know what? I've been looking at the pricing. It's just it's not affordable for me yet.
It really? Why is the pricing so high? It should come down. It really should.
You know what I wish, honestly? I wish there were a business. Like, I'm driving right now by myself in my car, and I can't be efficient. Like, I can't work. I can't do anything else. I mean, I'm talking to you guys, but, you know, I have to drive. I wish there were a longer-range Uber so that I could grab, you know, like if somebody was willing to drive me to Atlanta instead of driving me to downtown Nashville to go to a game for 25 minutes, why can't I find somebody to drive me for 4 hours? Because the thing is, for a drive to a place like Atlanta, I also spend a lot of time thinking about it. Like, it's not worth driving to the airport to me, sitting at the airport, going through security, worrying about whether or not there might be a delay on the flight, flying to Atlanta, then having to get transportation back to my hotel and everything else. So I feel like there's a business opportunity out there for a longer form of Uber, where there's got to be college kids who would take, you know, X number of dollars to, you know, take me one way and then pick me up and bring me back, and I can work during the drive or read or do whatever else I need to do.
Clay, you're on your way to watch Alabama, Georgia. You and I watched it in that very same building earlier this year. We stood on the sidelines and watched Tua look off the safety, find the receiver down the field to beat Georgia in that comeback for Alabama to win. We'll start there. There's a lot to get to, obviously, with you, as there always is every Friday here on the Midday 180, served up Wendy's. But do you see this game playing out similarly in terms of Alabama winning it? Do you think it's going to be an easier win for the Crimson Tide, considering the weapons we've seen and probably the deepest and best wide receiver core that we've ever seen to go along with the Lamborghini they've got at quarterback?
I actually like Georgia against with the numbers here, right? I mean, the line's around 13 or 13 and a half. I like Georgia and the under. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think that Georgia physically can match up with Alabama on the line of scrimmage a little bit better than just about anybody else, other than maybe Mississippi State on the defensive side of the ball that Alabama has played all year. And I honestly don't necessarily know. Maybe this will change. I don't know that Alabama is continuing to get better and better. That they were just okay against Citadel. I thought obviously they were mediocre for Alabama standards against Mississippi State. You give credit to some of the competition. And I know they pulled away from Auburn, but it wasn't a dominant performance until midway through the third quarter. And so I say all that to say maybe, just maybe, this is setting up so Alabama in the fourth quarter may have an actual challenge for once.
But even if they have a challenge, unless they were to get beaten in some unthinkable 63-10 fashion, that just means they're both in, right? Like, at this point, yeah. Alabama seems like they're a lock.
Lacking a – I don't even know how – yes, I – first of all, Nick Saban hasn't gotten beaten by an SEC team by more than 14 points in 7 years. So, I mean, that's a pretty amazing stat that's out there. So the idea that Saban would just get waxed or that Alabama would get run off the field, there's just no evidence to support that ever happening, no matter how good the team is, much less this being probably Nick Saban's most talented team overall that he's ever had. So we start there. And then the second part of your question, I think, is correct. And I was one of the first people who started saying this. I mean, look, Alabama's got 4 wins against top 25 teams in the most recent college football playoff ranking. That's more than anybody else. So if they lost to the number 4 team in a neutral site game by, you know, 3, 4, 10, 8, something like that points, I don't see any way that Alabama's not also in the playoff, which is one reason why I think Georgia's the more desperate team here. And I think sometimes being on the side of desperation is a good side to be on.
Now, I don't disagree with you there. When you look at, let's say Georgia does go ahead and lose and Alabama actually wins the football game, then you get into a little bit more of a debate, and it turns out it depends on what happens. But if everything goes to plan and the teams that are supposed to win, win, to me, the Purdue loss disqualifies Ohio State in relation to Oklahoma. There are some that are saying, oh, but they want Kyler Murray and Tua, so they're going to find a way to get him in there. I think that's nonsense, because I think Ohio State is still a bigger television draw than Oklahoma is, whether it's Kyler Murray playing against Tua Tagovailoa or not. Personally, I just think Oklahoma deserves to be there over Ohio State because of the conditions of those losses.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think Ohio State's a bigger draw than Oklahoma, but I think Oklahoma's resume is better. I think also that if everything kind of goes according to plan, and by that I mean, you know, Clemson wins, Alabama wins, Oklahoma wins, and Ohio State wins. One little interesting detail for people out there who are traveling or planning to go to these games is that Alabama right now would probably be in Dallas. If Oklahoma wins, you figure they're going to slot in as the number 4 seed. That would bump Alabama down to Miami to play Oklahoma down there, as opposed to playing Oklahoma in the dome there at Jerry World in Dallas. So I do think there's a little bit of intrigue associated with that, because Bama wouldn't want to be basically in the closest big city to the state of Oklahoma, where Oklahoma's already played at least 2 games in that city this year.
What do you think of Hugh Freeze as a possibility in Knoxville, and what would you think of a Jeremy Pruitt marriage with Hugh Freeze?
Well, I think it's the best possible hire Tennessee could make from a proven in the SEC as an offensive coordinator and play caller and everything else perspective. I think there are certainly complicating factors for Hugh Freeze, given his background, and also given some of the challenges that would come with needing to get SEC approval for that hire and everything else. But from a pure X's and O's perspective, who can make that offense as good as possible in the 2019 season? I don't think there's any doubt that the answer is Hugh Freeze.
When you think about Vandy, like, how much heart should Vandy fans take out of 3 wins in a row over Tennessee, and how much should they be thinking with Kyle Shurmur and the weapons that this team had this year? 3 wins over Tennessee in a row is nice, but this team underachieved and tougher days are ahead.
I think it should be the latter. Look, I mean, I think you enjoy beating Tennessee 3 years in a row, but it's not just beating Tennessee 3 years in a row. It's beating the worst Tennessee teams, by and large, 3 years in a row. Now, the first win, I think, was a really great win for Vanderbilt. That's kind of the Kyle Shurmur coming out party, because if Tennessee, if I remember correctly, had won that game against Vanderbilt, they would have been in the SEC championship game, I think, if I'm not mistaken. In that scenario, or maybe not SEC championship. I think they would have been in the Sugar Bowl, because I think Florida was still going to go. They would have been in the Sugar Bowl, which would have been a pretty nice achievement, not to mention you get to 9 wins in the regular season and then get a chance to get to 10. So I think that was the best of those wins by far, beating the worst Tennessee team of all time by schedule and record, and then beating the worst Tennessee team of all time by, you know, kind of Vegas perspective. Remember, Tennessee was an underdog in all 8 games in the SEC this year, which has never happened before. I don't think it's that great of an accomplishment. Plus, I think Kyle Shurmur's really good. I think Vanderbilt kind of has peaked under Derek Mason at 6-6. I don't think things are going to get that much better. Now, enjoy it. Enjoy it while you can. I'm not sure that, you know, 20 years from now, you're going to look back and be like, oh, Vanderbilt's a better football program than Tennessee over this 20-year period. But over the last 5 or 6 years, they have been. And Vanderbilt, I don't know, has ever been able to say that before in my life. So you should enjoy it, but I think it's a little bit bittersweet because you simultaneously understand, man, our ceiling is not very high. It requires Tennessee's floor to be low for us to compete with them.
Hey, this is Kyle Turris.
This is Yusha Saros.
This is Matias Ekholm.
Hey, this is Nick Bonino from the Nashville Predators. Follow us all season long on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back, Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. Glad to have you with us. Thanks for making this part of your day here on 104.5 The Zone. Paul Kaharsky to my right. I'm Jason Martin. Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow back on Monday. We're live at the Titans Pro Shop, the Titans locker room store here at Nissan Stadium. Titans Jets coming up on Sunday. Clay had a really interesting point about Dak Prescott this morning on Outkick the Coverage. He's the host of that show. It runs, the first hour runs live 5 to 6 a.m. prior to the wake-up zone here on 104.5 The Zone. But, Paul, you had something else you wanted to talk about, Clay, with.
Well, hear me out on this, Clay. I think this is where you and I have been fundamentally at odds since we both emerged at the zone semi-simultaneously. You're very good at breaking people down, but generally from afar. And you came up kind of in the criticism without access, kind of the deadspin mantra, if you will, at the beginning. And I came up on the other side of it where I'm dealing with people every day. And you kind of said this week something akin to, and when it's your turn, you'll correct me if I'm wrong. People who cover the Titans are afraid to criticize John Robinson because they're buddy-buddy with him. I'll flip it from Robinson to Vrabel. Now, I deal with Vrabel almost every day. I've worked hard to establish a professional, trustworthy relationship with Vrabel. And I've ripped Vrabel all week for going against fundamental tenets about not asking players to do things that they can't, and these things about the Stocker play, which I thought was idiotic. Yet I can go out there and I can ask Vrabel questions and have a relationship with him and look him in the eye. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's an invaluable thing. I think we need that in all levels of society, where I can criticize the guy and still have a relationship with him and look him in the eye and he look me in the eye and we have professional respect for each other. But you say everybody's buddy-buddy with the guy and afraid to criticize him, and you just want to blast him from afar and never meet him. I don't understand how you come to terms with one over the other.
Well, first of all, there's two different jobs, right? To me, I don't read your I'm not a subscriber, so I don't know what your audience wants on a day-to-day basis. But I don't think that you talking about the Titans is more entertaining to me because you go to the Titans practices and you're at the Titans facility every day. Now, I understand that you came up from the side where that's important. What I have found in my experience is, by and large, access is handcuffs. So the more time you spend around somebody, in order to keep that access, you can't say every single thing that you actually want to say. And so I would rather be able to say everything that I want to say and not worry about whether or not I'm going to get a press pass to be able to go back to the Titans facility on a day-in and day-out basis. And I'm just using the Titans as an example.
Sure.
Because, obviously, you know, there are people who go in every day. Like, everybody's got a little bit different of a gig, right? Like, Hutton works at Titans Radio. His obligations and responsibilities are different than yours would be, are different than Withrow's would be, or Brent, or Mickey, or Blaine, or anybody else, right? And so what I have found is what people want from me is my 100% honest opinion without any interest whatsoever in ever going to get a beer with Mike Vrabel or John Robinson or anybody else and having an off-the-record conversation with them.
But is that opinion as informed as you make it out to be? You have not had conversations with them or other people to get the other side of the story.
But hold on. Well, I don't pretend that I'm anything other than a smart fan. That's been my perspective of writing and writing books and everything else for my entire life. By and large, I'm not claiming to be an insider. Now, what has become interesting with my career in general is a lot of guys who are coaches now are fans of what I do at Outkick. And one of the things that I have to balance is I now have a lot more information now at, you know, 39, having done what I've done for 15 years, than I did when I was, you know, 25 years old writing my first column while being a practicing attorney in the Virgin Islands. So I do think there's a little bit of cross-pollination there that happens more often than not now, but it's not me seeking out. It's sometimes people have gotten smart and said, man, this guy Clay Travis has got an audience. I'm a fan of his, or whatever else. I mean, there are, you know, a lot of Titans players who read and interact with what I do on a regular basis. And I don't even know some of those guys, right?
I just think it's ironic. You are way closer to James Franklin than I will ever be to any coach or GM that's been involved with the Titans. But you sell it like Titans Media Corps is in John Robinson and Mike Vrabel's pocket.
But
when you're
the guy whose wife is buddies
and hangs out at the beach with people. So which is it?
But you know that. Like, I try to be as honest as I can be. If you don't believe that my opinion on James Franklin is as honest as it is because I hang out at the beach with him during the summer sometimes, that's certainly a valid criticism. But I don't pretend anything other than that, right?
Well, what am I pretending? You're making it sound like I'm pretending something.
No, I didn't specifically attack you. I think you have you know, like, an idea that you are, to me, let's take a step back. I've talked about this for a while. I think people who cover sports for a living oftentimes believe that what they do is more important than it actually is.
Oh, right? I agree with that.
But, you know, the thing I think about a lot now is I am unabashedly a Tennessee Titans fan, right? I get really legitimately angry when I see a performance that happens like we saw on Monday night against the Texans. And I think that in general, that's the way other fans respond. But my audience is obviously much larger than the average fan of the Titans would be. So I think when I'm tweeting or I'm out there talking angrily, I try and think about it like, you know, ultimately my goal is to be as honest as I possibly can. That's what I did on the radio. That's what I do with my writing. I tell you exactly what I think. And sometimes I think that can work against me because it's unvarnished and there's, you know, like not a, there's not an element of, you know, I don't want to say that there's clear bias, right? Because I want my team to win. I want the other team to lose. But I think that's probably the biggest flaw associated with what I do if you want to assess it from that perspective. But, from the perspective of, you know, like on a day in and day out basis, do I pay a lot of attention to news that comes out of the Titans camp? Not really, unless it's a player and whether or not they're injured and they're going to play. Certainly that's something that the media brings to us. But I don't know that if the Titans said, hey, no media can cover us anymore and only Jim Wyatt is going to give, you know, like only Jim Wyatt's going to be able to ask questions at practice and everything else. I don't know that as a consumer, I would be losing very much.
Yeah, I think when Dick LeBeau was out, you were pretty interested. I think when Matt LaFleur was in, you were pretty interested. I think you're dismissing some things that were pretty newsworthy to you as a fan of the Titans that you wouldn't have gotten.
Right, but
for people like me.
I guess what I'm saying is the information is going to get out. There's a difference to me between
it's very dismissive.
Like,
the information's going to get out, but somebody has to get it out. And
right,
for you to converse
Titans
about.
The Titans at some point are going to, you know, acknowledge that they have a new defensive coordinator or a new offensive coordinator. What I'm saying is, to me, the only time when I read something and I think, oh, my God, like, I can't believe this is out there, is something that would otherwise have not gotten out. That's journalism. Otherwise, it's just a method of distribution, right? So the way that the Titans, this is a larger scale, you know, kind of discussion, but the way that the Titans disseminate information to me is not necessarily like what I am after is if somebody's got something that otherwise I'm never going to hear about, right? If there's a great reporting that's done inside of the Patriots and I believe that that's accurate and I get to read all about the dynamics between Brady and Belichick and Robert Kraft and everything else and that's otherwise not getting out, that's the kind of work that I would want to pay for. I personally don't think there's very much news that I would otherwise not see that I get from
I certainly agree with you. There's a different level there, and but there are fans who want things sooner rather than later. But I wanted to get back, and we'll extend here a little bit if we can to this idea how is somebody in John Robinson's pocket if they can both write critically of him and are still willing or interested in maintaining a relationship with him on a level that doesn't mean you're sitting on a chair with him at the beach?
I think that John Robinson gets treated insanely well by the media because he's a good old boy from Tennessee. And I think that also tracks...
because I'm a good old boy from Tennessee.
No. But the way that he is treated, I think, relative to his overall performance as a GM, is insanely valued by the fact that I think he's from Union City and he's a good old boy from West Tennessee. And I think people have given him a pass that they wouldn't have given a pass before. I'm not just saying you. I think it's media. I think it's fans. I think he's adroitly played the I'm coming home to Tennessee to make this team great. And by and large, his decision-making has not been that great. And his signings have not been that great. And I think the idea of trying to remake the New England Patriots by getting people that the Patriots no longer want is one of the most insane ideas I've ever heard of. Because the Patriots are the Patriots because they know how to value the players and the coaches that they have kept around Bill Belichick for decades now. So I think there's a lot more room for criticism. And look, this is something that I think is a large issue across the board, and I think you would agree, and this has been my statement on it in general. With access comes handcuffs, right? Back when I was practicing law, people used to say, oh, the salary of a lawyer is great. And it's true. When you're 25 years old and you make $150,000, you feel like you're walking on air. But early on, one of the lawyers said, you got to be careful, because what you learn is these are you've got gold, but it's golden handcuffs. And I think that access corrupts ultimately as much or more than it does not, right?
So that's amazing to me that you'll go that far with that, and you say, but it's fine that I'm at the beach with Franklin as long as I just tell everybody I am. James Franklin gains more from being at the beach with you than anybody in any of these relationships. James Franklin is gaining more from being at the beach with you than any of these other kind of access relationships you're talking about. You're being insincere if you think anything but that. He's got a golden ticket with you. You will never say a negative thing about Penn State ever. Your wife is best friends with his wife or whatever. That's as good as it gets. That's handcuffs. He's got you in a prison suite.
I guess I disagree because I'm willing to tell everybody. So if you disagree with me, like if you don't think...
Well, I tell everybody. Mike Vrabel's call for Luke Stocker was horse bleep.
With Penn State. I disagree. All right? I mean, this is a big deal to you. I think in general, there are a ton of sports media who will show up at Titans facility today and provide virtually nothing of value.
I agree.
Of what the Titans want them to provide.
That's why I got a successful business, because I'm providing a ton of value. We got to go, Clay, because of break. It was a good debate.
Appreciate it.
Clay, thank you, man. Be safe on the way down there. Enjoy the games.